All right, so today we're diving into something I know a lot of our listeners struggle with:
Oh, yeah.
choosing the right processing tech for different mold materials. Like,
Right.
you already know your materials,
Yeah.
you know, whether it's P20 steel or stainless or whatever you're working with.
Right.
But this deep dive is about going deeper.
Yep.
It's about finding those aha moments that really separate a good mold
Yeah.
from a frustrating scrap heap bound one.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think, you're past the basics at this point,
Right.
so we're not going to just define hardness and toughness and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
But we're going to talk about how those properties actually impact,
Yeah.
your choices at the machining level.
Okay.
What to watch out for with specific materials you're probably using, the stuff that textbooks kind of gloss over.
Yeah. For
Yeah.
sure. Like, I remember when I was first starting out
Yeah.
battling H13 and S136 mold steels.
Oh, yeah.
Even with carbide, those felt like fighting a boss level enemy.
H13, S136. Infamous for a reason.
Right.
It's not just the hardness, it's the abrasive wear they cause.
Oh.
So carbide is still the go-to, but we need to get picky about grades and coatings to
Okay.
really combat that wear.
So it's more than just grabbing any carbide tool off the shelf.
Absolutely.
Makes sense.
You gotta know what you're working with.
What kind of coatings would you recommend?
Two that come to mind right away are tin and T-Allen.
Okay.
So tin is kind of like your all-around workhorse. Good wear resistance, handles heat pretty well.
Yeah.
But when you're dealing with those really abrasive steels,
Yeah.
T-Allen steps up.
Okay.
Even better hardness and thermal stability.
Okay.
So your tools last longer, you get a better surface finish.
Interesting. And how does coating choice tie into those
Oh,
specific
yeah.
speed and feed rates you mentioned?
It's all connected.
Okay.
Let's say you're roughing out some H13. With a T-Allen coated carbide, you can push the speed a
Oh.
bit, maybe up to 200 meters per minute.
Wow.
But then when you move to finishing, you got to dial it back
Okay.
80 to 120 meters per minute.
Okay.
Precision and surface quality are key there.
Right, because I've definitely learned the hard way about
Oh,
pushing things too fast and finishing.
for sure.
Now, when we talk about toughness, and I think stainless steel
Yeah.
is a good example everyone's run into, what are the key things to keep in mind there?
Stainless is that reliable friend who also tests your patience.
Right.
Tough work, hardens easily,
Yeah.
and loves to vibrate during machining.
Oh, yeah.
Coated tools are your heroes here,
Huh.
but the specifics matter.
Okay, so beyond just knowing I need a coated tool,
Right.
what else should I be considering?
Well, first, let's talk about the type of coating.
Okay.
We've got tin T-Allen, like we talked about, but for stainless, you might even want to think about something like a diamond-like carbon coating
Okay.
or DLC. Incredibly slippery, reduces friction even further,
Okay.
which is key with stainless's tendency to work hardened.
Yeah.
And it helps with chip evacuation,
Yeah.
which can be a real pain.
Ah, chip evacuation. I've had some explosive experiences with
I bet.
chips getting jammed up.
Yeah.
So DLC sounds like a good option for dealing with that.
It can be.
What about specific cutting parameters for stainless?
Sure.
Is it similar to those harder steels?
Not quite.
Okay.
With stainless, you generally want to run slower speeds than with something like H13.
Okay.
Think more in the range of 80 to 150 meters per minute.
Got it.
Feed rates usually around 0.1 to 0.3 millimeters per revolution.
Okay.
But these are starting points.
Starting points, meaning I shouldn't just blindly plug those in and
No.
hope for the best.
Exactly. Every machine, every tool,
Right.
every batch of material is slightly different.
Yeah.
You got to tune in, listen to
Yeah.
the cut, feel the forces. If you're hearing squealing, seeing excessive vibration,
Yeah.
or your chips are coming out all bird nested, you need to adjust.
That's a great point.
It's an art as much as a science.
It's almost like developing a sense for the material,
Yes.
not just following a recipe.
Exactly. Now, ductility is where things get really interesting.
Yeah, okay.
Ductile materials like copper alloys are like those playful puppies,
Okay.
fun to work with,
Yeah.
but they can be unpredictable.
I like that analogy.
Yeah.
So with ductile materials, what are the main things to watch out for? I
Yeah.
know they tend to deform easily if you're not careful.
Deformation's a big one.
Right.
You need to control cutting forces very carefully.
Okay.
Too much pressure, and you'll end up with warping or tearing,
Yeah.
especially in thin-walled sections.
So how do you control those cutting forces effectively?
Well,
Is it all about speed and feed rates?
speed and feed rates play a role,
Okay.
but there's another factor that often gets overlooked.
What's that?
Tool geometry.
Tool geometry, you mean the shape of the tool itself?
Exactly the shape, the rake angle, the clearance angle.
Okay.
These all influence how the tool engages with the material and how the chips are formed and evacuated.
Okay.
For Duxol materials.
Yeah.
You want a tool geometry that shears the material cleanly.
Okay.
Reducing the cutting force, minimizing the chance of deformation.
So it's not just about picking the right material for the tool,
right,
but also the right shape.
Absolutely.
Is there a specific tool geometry you'd recommend for ductile materials like copper alloys?
One option is a high positive rake angle.
Okay.
This creates a sharper cutting edge,
mm-hmm,
reduces the force needed to shear through the material.
Got it.
But again, it depends on the specific alloy and the application.
Right.
Worth experimenting with different geometries to find what works best.
This is making me realize how much nuance there is to all of this.
I know, right?
I feel like I've been approaching it a bit too simplistically.
It's a common mistake.
Okay.
We tend to focus on the material properties themselves.
Yeah.
But it's the interplay of those properties with the tooling.
Right.
And the process parameters that really determines success.
It's like a symphony, not just individual notes.
Perfect analogy.
Okay.
Speaking of symphonies.
Yeah.
Let's move on to materials that are a bit more temperamental.
Okay.
I'm talking about those with low thermal stability.
Oh, yeah.
Like ceramic-based composites.
Oh, yeah. Those are a whole different beast.
They are.
I remember trying to machine a ceramic composite once.
Oh, yeah.
And it felt like trying to carve ice with a chainsaw.
Wow.
It was so brittle.
Yeah, ceramic composites.
Yeah.
They're amazing for their temperature resistance.
Mm-hmm.
But that brittleness is their Achilles heel.
Right.
Traditional machining methods can generate a lot of heat.
Yeah.
Leading to micro cracks.
Right.
And ultimately failure.
Yeah.
So you need to be extra cautious.
So what's the best approach when you have to machine these delicate materials?
There are a few options.
Okay.
One is to use specialized techniques like ultrasonic machining.
Okay.
Imagine sound waves acting as your cutting tool.
Whoa.
It's precise.
Yeah.
Generates minimal heat.
Okay.
Can handle even the most fragile materials.
Sound waves as tools, that sounds like something straight out of science fiction.
It's pretty incredible.
Yeah.
And then you have laser processing.
Oh, wow.
Which is equally fascinating.
Yeah.
It's like using a lightsaber to precisely cut through the material.
Okay.
Without generating excess heat.
I'm definitely going to need to do a deep dive into both ultrasonic.
For sure.
And laser processing. Those sound like game changers.
Oh, they are.
Okay.
But what if you don't have access to those
right.
specialized technologies?
Because those fancy setups aren't exactly sitting in everyone's workshop.
Right.
So what can you do if you're stuck with the conventional methods?
You can still work with them.
Okay.
But you need to be extra careful.
All right.
First off, speed is your enemy.
Okay.
You want to keep things slow and steady. Somewhere between 50 and 100 meters per minute.
Okay.
To minimize heat buildup.
Slow and steady wins the race with these materials.
It does.
Got it. What about feed rates?
Again, keep them on the lower end.
Okay.
Maybe around 0.05 to 0.1 millimeters per revolution.
All right.
And here's another critical tip.
Yeah.
Use sharp tools.
Sharp tools make sense. A dull tool is just going to push and generate more heat. Right?
Exactly. And it'll increase the cutting forces.
Right.
Which can lead to those dreaded micro cracks.
Yeah.
So make sure your tools are sharp and properly maintained.
Okay.
Think of it like this. You wouldn't try to cut a delicate cake with a dull knife, would you?
No, I definitely would not.
Right.
So we've talked about hardness, toughness, ductility,
mm-hmm.
now thermal stability.
Yep.
I'm starting to get a feel for how each of these properties dictates our approach to machining.
Uh-huh.
But I'm realizing there's so much more to consider than just those
absolute
four basic properties.
It's like we've laid the foundation. Now it's time to build upon it.
Okay. Cool. Okay, so we've covered those core material properties.
Right.
But as we were just saying, there's always more to the story.
Always.
What are some of those other factors that can make or break a mold machining project?
Well, one thing we touched on briefly is tool geometry.
Right.
It's amazing how often people underestimate its importance.
Yeah. I'll admit, I used to think it was just about picking carbide or HSS, maybe a coating.
Oh, yeah.
But now I'm seeing it's way more nuanced than that.
It really is.
So where do you even begin with figuring out the right tool geometry? It seems overwhelming.
It can be. But luckily, tool manufacturers provide a lot of guidance.
Okay.
They usually have recommended applications for each geometry.
Right.
And don't underestimate the power of a good machining handbook.
Okay, so I need to get cozy with those handbooks.
Yeah.
But is there a way to simplify it, at least at a high level? Like, are there certain geometries that are generally better for roughing versus finishing?
Absolutely. For roughing, you generally want a strong, robust geometry.
Mm-hmm.
Think large rake angles for good chip removal.
Okay.
And a tougher cutting edge to handle the higher forces.
Yeah.
Finishing tools, on the other hand, are all about precision.
Right.
And surface quality.
Okay.
So you'll see smaller rake angles,
mm-hmm.
sharper cutting edges.
Okay.
And features designed to produce a smooth, consistent chip.
Interesting. So even within a single tool material like carbide,
yeah.
you've got all this variation in geometry.
You do.
Makes a lot of sense.
It does.
Now, another factor that's often overlooked is the end use of the mold.
Oh, that's a big one. Yeah.
Yeah. Different molds have different jobs to do.
Right.
A mold for mass production is going to have different needs than one for a prototype.
Exactly. A prototype mold might prioritize speed and cost effectiveness.
Yeah.
You're not as worried about longevity or super fine surface finishes.
Right.
But a production mold that's going to be running thousands of cycles.
Yeah.
You need to think about wear resistance, dimensional stability, all those long-term factors.
So it's not just about the material.
Right.
But also understanding the environment that mold will be living in.
Precisely.
Yeah.
Let's say you're making a mold for injection, molding a high-performance plastic.
Okay.
You might need to consider things like the melt temperature,
right.
the injection pressure, even the potential for chemical attack from the plastic.
Oh, wow.
These can all influence your choice of mold material.
Okay.
And processing techniques.
It's really about taking a holistic view.
It is.
Looking at the entire life cycle of the mold, this is making me rethink a lot of my past projects.
Very good. Now, let's not forget about the elephant in the room cost.
Ah, yes, the ever-present budget constraints.
It's a constant balancing act, isn't it?
It is.
You want the ideal material, the perfect tools, the most advanced processing techniques, but reality often has other plans.
So how do you navigate that balance? What are the key cost factors to consider?
Well, obviously, there's the cost of the mold material itself. Some materials are inherently more expensive to machine due to their hardness or toughness.
Yeah.
Then you have tooling costs.
Okay.
High-performance coatings and specialized geometries come with a premium.
Yeah. Those fancy DLC coatings we were talking about definitely don't come cheap.
They don't.
Okay.
But sometimes spending a bit more upfront on a premium tool can save you money in the long run.
How so?
Think about it. If you're using a cheaper tool that wears out quickly,
right.
You're spending more on replacements, downtime, and potentially even scrap parts.
Yeah.
A high-quality tool might have a higher initial cost, but it can last much longer, maintain its cutting performance, and ultimately lead to lower overall costs.
Okay. So it's like the old saying, sometimes you have to spend money to make money.
Exactly. And it's not just about the tool itself.
Okay.
Think about the machining process as a whole.
All right.
Optimizing your cutting parameters, reducing tool changes, minimizing scrap.
Okay.
All of these contribute to cost savings.
That makes sense. It's about efficiency at every stage.
It is.
Now, I know there's a growing focus on sustainability in manufacturing.
Yeah.
Does that come into play with mold making as well?
Absolutely. More and more companies are looking at the environmental impact of their processes.
So how do you make mold making more sustainable?
It starts with material selection.
Okay.
Are there recycled or bio-based options that meet your needs?
Right.
Then you look at your processes. Mm-hmm. Can you optimize cutting parameters to reduce energy consumption and tool wear?
Right.
Dry machining and minimal lubrication techniques are also gaining popularity.
Right. We talked about those earlier.
Yeah.
It's all about finding that sweet spot between lubrication and tool longevity.
It is.
It's encouraging to see that sustainability is becoming a bigger priority.
It is, and it ties into another crucial factor, safety.
Of course, safety should always be top of mind.
It should.
But how does it specifically relate to mold material processing?
Well, you're dealing with sharp tools.
Right.
High speeds, sometimes hazardous materials.
Yeah.
Proper training, machine guarding, and personal protective equipment are essential.
It's a reminder that even when we're geeking out over coatings and geometries,
right.
we can't forget the human element.
Exactly. A safe work environment is crucial for everyone.
Yeah.
And it's not just about preventing accidents.
Okay.
A culture of safety also means having processes in place.
Right.
to identify and mitigate risks.
Okay.
Promoting awareness and encouraging continuous improvement.
So it's a multifaceted approach. You can't just check a box and say safety is done.
No.
It's an ongoing process.
Precisely. And it's a process that's closely intertwined with everything we've discussed today.
Okay.
The choices you make about materials, tools, and processes all have implications for safety and sustainability.
It's like we've woven this intricate web of interconnected factors. I'm starting to see how they all influence each other.
That's a great way to put it. And as we continue our exploration of mold material processing, we'll keep uncovering more connections and insights.
Wow, we've really been digging deep into all these factors. Well, we have impact mold material processing.
Yeah.
Way more complex than I initially thought.
It is, but that's what makes it so fascinating.
Yeah.
Always something new to learn.
Right.
New challenges to solve.
Speaking of new, I think it's time we talk about the future of mold making.
The future?
Yeah. What are some of those cutting edge technologies that are changing the game?
Well, we touched on a few already.
Yeah.
Ultrasonic machining, laser processing.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a whole wave of innovation coming at us.
Okay.
One you've probably heard about is additive manufacturing.
Okay.
Or 3D printing.
3D printing, yeah. It seems like everyone's talking about it these days.
It's everywhere.
But how does it actually apply to making molds?
It's changing the entire paradigm.
Okay.
Traditionally, we make molds by subtracting material.
Right.
Machining away excess to get the desired shape.
Yeah.
3D printing lets us build molds layer by layer.
Okay.
From a digital design.
So no more roughing, finishing, worrying about tool paths.
Not necessarily. 3D printing has its limitations.
Right.
The range of materials is still evolving.
Yeah.
And the surface finish might not always meet the needs of high precision molds.
Okay.
But for prototyping rapid tooling.
Yeah.
Even some production applications. It's a game changer.
I'm imagining the design freedom must be incredible.
Oh, it is.
No more being limited by what you can achieve
right.
with traditional cutting tools.
Exactly. You can create complex geometries, internal features, conformal cooling channels, things that would be incredibly difficult or impossible with conventional methods.
That's mind-blowing. It sounds like 3D printing will become increasingly important in the mold-making world.
It already is.
Wow.
And alongside additive manufacturing,
yeah.
we're seeing advancements in traditional techniques.
Okay.
High-speed machining, for example,
mm-hmm.
is pushing the boundaries of what's achievable with cutting tools.
High-speed machining, is that just about cranking up the RPMs?
It's more than just speed. It's about using specialized machines, tooling, and processes
okay.
that can handle those extreme cutting conditions.
Got it.
The result is faster machining times,
mm-hmm.
improved surface finishes,
okay.
and the ability to work with even harder materials.
So it's not just about going faster. It's about doing more with that speed.
Precisely. And of course, we can't talk about the future of manufacturing
right.
without mentioning automation and robotics.
Robots are becoming ubiquitous in factories.
They are.
How are they impacting mold making?
In countless ways.
Okay.
Robots can handle repetitive tasks.
Yeah.
Like loading and unloading work pieces.
Right.
But they can also perform complex machining operations
wow.
with incredible precision and repeatability.
So robots aren't just replacing human workers.
No. Yep.
They're augmenting our capabilities.
Yeah, exactly. They're freeing up skilled machinists
okay.
to focus on more complex tasks.
Right.
Improving safety.
Mm-hmm.
Increasing overall efficiency.
It's really exciting to see how technology is transforming the world of mold making.
It is.
But with all these advancements, is there a risk of losing sight of the fundamentals?
That's a great question.
Yeah.
And the answer is a resounding no.
Okay.
No matter how advanced our technology becomes,
yeah.
it's still built upon those core principles
right.
of material science, tooling, and process control.
Okay.
We can't forget that.
So it's not about choosing between high tech and fundamentals.
Right.
It's about understanding how they work together.
Exactly. It's like building a house.
Okay.
You can have all the fancy appliances and smart home features you want.
Yeah.
But if the foundation is weak, the whole thing crumbles.
That's a perfect analogy.
Right.
We need that solid foundation of knowledge to truly leverage
Absolutely.
The power of these new technologies.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
All right.
And that's what we've aimed to do in this deep dive.
Mm.
Give you a strong foundation to build upon.
Okay.
As you explore the exciting world of mold material processing.
We've covered a lot of ground, from the basics of material properties to the latest advancements in technology.
We have.
It's been quite a journey.
It has. And the journey doesn't end here. There's always more to discover, more to learn.
So true. And for anyone listening, if you've been inspired to take a deeper dive into any of these topics,
yeah,
don't hesitate to reach out.
Please do.
We're always happy to share resources and insights.
Absolutely. And remember, the world of mold material processing is constantly evolving.
Yeah.
So stay curious. Keep learning.
Right.
And never stop pushing the boundaries.
Well said. That's a wrap for this deep dive.
It is.
We'll see you next time for another exploration of the fascinating world of manufacturing.
See you then.